This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about special education rights and children with disabilities. This is a rather complicated area. There's a lot of emotion that goes into this, a great deal of parental anxiety. We're going to talk about a number of these issues. My guests are Catherine Miola, Deputy County Counsel, San Mateo County Counsel's Office, and Susan Foley, a special education rights attorney. Her offices are in San Mateo. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the San Mateo County Bar Association, which has, I think, somewhere in the excess of about 1,100 members. Additional funding is provided by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Well, Kathy and Susan, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
You. It's good
very,
to be
very
here.
Nice to have you here. I wonder, Kathy, if you could get us started with giving us a little overview of the law. Are we dealing with both state and federal law or what here?
That's entirely correct, Chuck. We are dealing with both federal and state law, and it's called the IDEA, which requires a school district to provide a child that qualifies for special education a free and appropriate public education, otherwise known as FAPE.
What does that mean by appropriate? I understand free. I think all of us can understand in the public school system that the education supposedly is free.
That's correct.
Other than we pay taxes, of course.
That's correct. And I think Susan would agree with me that the dispute generally circles around whether it's appropriate or not.
What does that mean? Give us an example of what is appropriate.
Well, the case law has determined that appropriate means is the child making adequate progress on the goals as determined by the IEP team. So the IEP team...
Now, wait a minute. Let's do this. IEP stands for what?
Individualized Education Plan for the particular child.
Right.
And
all
so
right.
The IEP team will have with it is district employees as well as parents, and they will all come together and decide what goals the child should be working on for that particular year, because they have to be updated every year. And then the current progress that the child is making and the level present level of education that the child has, mm-hmm. and then the goals and then the placement that the district is offering, as well as the services that the district provides for the child to reach those goals or to make progress on those goals.
Now, I understand from our pre-program discussion that we're dealing with children starting at age 3. And if the disability continues up through age 22, is that right, Susan?
That's correct. If a child receives a high school diploma and has an IEP, then the district has no further responsibility
oh, really?
For that student.
Really?
If
oh.
a child gets a completion certification, then the district does owe that child an education until age 22.
Mm-hmm.
So if the child has a disability that's too severe to earn the high school diploma, then the district is responsible for the education through age 22. Some of 18 to 22-year-olds participate in vocational training mm-hmm. with districts.
If a parent sees that there is some kind of a program in a private school and the parent wants that kind of educational service to be provided for the parent's disabled child in the public school, how does the public school district deal with that, Kathy?
Well, during the IEP team, the parents are present and they're participating in the IEP team. And so they can tell the district or the rest of the members at that point that they want this particular private school. However, if this private school if the district does not agree that the private school is the appropriate placement and the district feels that they can serve the child, then the district may make a public placement in that situation, even though the parents want this private school. One of the things that the parents have to remember is that the district is also required to provide the education in a least restrictive environment, which we also say is LRE. The least restrictive environment means that the special education student, to the extent possible and to the greatest extent possible, is educated with typically developing peers.
So, which means what?
Which means in a full inclusion setting, that is a general education classroom, if at all possible,
mm-hmm.
or if not, as much as possible throughout the day. So let's say a child qualifies for, say, a special day class where they're educated in a very small environment by a district teacher. They may be mainstreamed, that is, brought out to the other classrooms for a particular subject that they're very strong in, or perhaps recess, or perhaps PE. physical mm-hmm. education, mm-hmm. or perhaps an elective like music or something or art.
What if a child is deaf and the parent feels that there needs to be someone who in the classroom who does sign language to help the child? Is that something that can that the parents can get, or is that a difficult situation?
For deaf students, the district has to teach those students in their mode of communication. So if they are participating in CSI or American Sign Language, then the district has to provide an education where they can access the education.
Mm-hmm.
They may or may not need a one-to-one interpreter. And that's the United States Supreme Court case. That child was deaf and getting A's and socializing and had a good rapport with her teacher. So the court said she did not need it. That doesn't mean every deaf student would not need it. Mm-hmm. There's a decision. I had a case where an autistic child that was nonverbal had about 100 signs, and we got an order that his one-to-one aide have 100 more signs than he had, so he could continually learn more signs.
Where would that aide be? Would that aide be working with this child at home or at the school?
At the school.
At the
school. That case, yes.
In the classroom?
Yes.
How would that work though? If the aide was in the classroom, how would that give us an example how that would work in the classroom?
Well, in that case, that was the only way that the child communicated was with American Sign Language.
I see. Okay.
So she interpreted everything,
and the aide is present in the classroom with the teacher, assisting that particular student and perhaps assisting other students, so that the child isn't. The attention isn't called to that child. It's part of the classroom.
I see. My understanding from what you told me is that although the special education services can start at age 3, there's a 2-year statute of limitation where you have to, there's an evaluation, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't have any background in this area at all, but is there an evaluation every 2 years to determine whether or not this child continues to need special education? And if you don't do it, there's a statute of limitations problem and you can lose out? Or did I misunderstand you?
No. So the child has to be evaluated every 3 years.
Every
it's
3 years.
It's called a triannual. But then every year, the IEP team has to meet to update the IEP team placement services goals for that particular student. But every 3 years, they're evaluated through an assessment by the school district.
But what was the statute of limitations that you were talking about, Susan, before we went on the air? What was that?
That's a 2-year statute of limitations in which to receive a remedy. So if your child's in first grade and you remove them from the public school and go pay for private, then you have 2 years to file for hearing against the district to get reimbursed for the private school that you paid for. So it's if you left your child in the public school classroom for first, second, and third grade, and then at that point decided he's learned nothing and I'm going to file for hearing against the district to get compensatory educational services, that student can only receive a remedy going back 2 years.
Really?
You can complain about what happened 3 years ago,
mm-hmm.
but a judge is only going to compensate that student for the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. And it used to be 3 years, but school districts complained that it was too far out there, that their witnesses moved to, different states, and it's a 2-year statute of limitations.
Where do you find, or what do you find are the most frequent disabilities that children are afflicted with that come before both of you?
The wide range of disabilities.
Really?
Absolutely.
It is very wide.
Speech and language, autism, emotional disturbance.
Mm-hmm.
The category in which the child qualifies for special education is important for sure. And there are criteria to determine whether or not the particular student would qualify for a particular category. But the services that the district provides are tailored for that particular student, regardless of the category in which they qualify. It does come into play in the decision making, but the category that you qualify for doesn't dictate what services are only on the menu, let's say.
What if a parent, though, is not happy with what the school district is proposing as quality of special education for the child. How does the parent go about dealing with something like this?
Well, there are different ways the parent can go about dealing with that. First of all, the parent can request an IEP team meeting to air out the complaints that they have with regard to the district placement. And any time a parent requests an IEP team meeting, the district must hold one within 30 days. And so that is the opportunity for the parent to work with the district.
Does the parent have to pay for that IEP meeting?
No, not at all.
Okay.
That's all part of the free education.
Okay.
But as Susan indicated, some parents decide that they just do not want the public education and they want to put their child in private school. And parents are free to make that decision, of course. But as Susan indicated, that if they sue for reimbursement, they're going to get reimbursement only if the district did not offer an appropriate education for that particular student.
Mm-hmm.
And so... So that is where the fight is what the district's offer was and whether it was appropriate for that particular student when you're talking about reimbursement for private school.
And the lawsuit against the school district would be brought in the Superior Court. Is that correct?
No, there's a remedy within the IDEA that we were talking about, the federal and state law. So a parent can file a complaint and a district can file a complaint as well and ask for a due process hearing. And a due process hearing is presided over by an ALJ or an administrative law judge who comes to the school district.
Not an employee of the school district.
No, not at all.
Okay.
He comes to the school district. It's held at the school district for the convenience of the parents and the district personnel as well. But that is the hearing process if a parent wanted to file a complaint against the district.
Where do you find the greatest anxiety of parents in this whole process?
Well, it's regarding their child and where their child will be educated and by whom.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a disabled child, 3 years old, 8 years old, and they're struggling with communicating with everybody, to leave that child anywhere for 6 hours, and that child cannot come home and tell the parents what happened that day.
Mm-hmm.
I have... clients who have experienced that their child comes home scratched, bruised, and nobody can explain where they came from. Well, kids get hurt on playgrounds,
but
when your child can't tell you, and the children with autism who are nonverbal or just learning to talk, that is a lot of anxiety for parents.
How do they deal? How do they and how do you as an attorney for a parent or parents deal with something like this?
Well, there's times that, Kathy said, that parents want private school.
Mm-hmm.
The clients I represent, their child usually needs the private school.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than...
When you say need, why? Why does the child need the private school as opposed to the public school?
A comprehensive elementary school campus would have 200 to 500 students. A private school for learning disabled children may have 80 students.
I see.
And the teacher-student ratio, one teacher for five students versus one teacher in a special day class, it's low. It's 12 students and a couple aides. But in a general ed class, it would be, 25 to 30 students. And some of these kids are just dyslexic. They can't learn the way everybody else learns.
Dyslexic, define that for us, would you?
It's a visual disorder that the brain misinterprets they see on paper, what they see. They see fine, but the brain switches it around, and that's dyslexia.
And so if they are writing something, they might mix up the letters so that it's not, instead of spelling English, E-N-G-L-I-S-H, it would be mixed up. Is that an
example?
It's
reading and writing.
Reading and writing.
It's a visual perception issue.
Right.
There's a writing issue called dysgraphia, which they read fine, but they can't get the brain to put the message on paper. And there's a lot of different types of disabilities, and some are very mild, and those children can be educated in general education environments. But some are moderate to severe, and some of them need private school. It's not necessarily the parent wants private school. Parents don't want to drive their child 40 miles for a private school every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's necessary in their minds.
I take it if there is a private school option, then the school district, there's the issue of whether or not the school district can reimburse the parents for the private school.
That's correct. And sometimes an IEP team will place a child in a private school.
But that does not include, let's say, bus transportation from the child's home to the private school,
no,
I presume.
Does. It
could.
Oh, it could.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
If a district is making a placement in which transportation needs to be provided, then the district is required to provide transportation for a special education student.
Kathy and Susan, we are talking about federal and state law that applies throughout the state of California.
That's correct.
And although, Kathy, you represent school districts in San Mateo County, you as a member of the San Mateo County County Council's office represent school districts.
That's correct.
This is unique to San Mateo County, and would you tell us why?
Sure. Back before 1970, it was required that county council's offices represent school districts. And then in 1970, I think it was 72, the education code was changed.
The California Education Code?
Correct.
Okay.
To allow private representation of school districts. And so many school districts then procured private representation for mm-hmm. their hearings and for their advice.
By private law firms or private Correct. Attorneys, private law firms.
Correct. But our county council, Tom Casey, back in 1987, believed that we provide a strong and good service to the school districts of San Mateo mm-hmm. County. And so we did continue to provide that service to some of the school districts of San Mateo County. And we've continued through that process. The Board of Supervisors supports mm-hmm. the work that we do on behalf of school districts and subsidizes some part of our cost. And because it is a good service that we provide. And then mm-hmm. there's also the second part of that analysis, which is that we sometimes come to cases with a different motivation and a different, attitude in attempting to resolve cases in the best interest of students and the best interest of parents and the best interest of school districts, because our salaries, our billable hours, those kinds of things are not part of our employment.
You're paid by
Correct.
San Mateo County no matter how much time you put into a case.
Correct.
Is that what you're saying?
That is what I'm
Whereas
saying.
Whereas a private attorney, the more time a private attorney puts into representing a school district, the more billable hours there are.
Right. And of course, I'm not casting any aspersions on any of the private attorneys. What I'm just trying to say is that mm-hmm. if a case in the best interest of the school district should be resolved rather than go to hearing, then that is something that we would argue for and that is something that we would attempt to accomplish. But as you know from my history, I have lots of trial experience, and I don't necessarily need any more trials for my career.
You and I were in the same office, the district attorney's office, for a while.
Correct.
And then you graduated from the third floor in the Hall of Justice to the sixth floor.
Right.
I'm still on the third floor.
Exactly. And so we just have a different motivation, I think, than some private attorneys have. And so I think that works to the best interests of our clients and to the best interests of the students that we are dealing with and the parents.
Is there any type of website that parents can go to, or websites that parents can go to try to get some insight into this whole area of special education for children with disabilities?
Yes. There is www.specialeducationconnection.com or .org, I believe.
www.specialeducationconnection. Connection.
C-O-N-N-E-C-T-I-O-N?
Correct. .org, you think?
Correct.
Okay. And who puts that together?
I don't know the answer to that question.
But it is a legitimate and you feel worthwhile website for
Absolutely.
Somebody to try to get some issues?
Yes.
The website I'd recommend is rightslaw.com.
Spell it.
W-R-I-G-H-T-S.
W-R-I.
G-H.
G-H.
T-S. L-A-W.
L-A-W.
.com. And it. Pete Wright is an attorney in Virginia.
Oh, really?
He's been doing this 20-some years.
Uh-huh.
He also lectures throughout the country, and mm-hmm. he has a very good website that will teach you the basics to intricate prevailing case law. The other thing I recommend parents do is go to the Office of Administrative Hearings website and read decisions.
That's correct. You can search the decisions for topics or keywords on their website and read summaries of the case law, summaries of, mm-hmm. of what's at issue in specific cases, and you can apply those to the facts of your own case if you wanted to read up on that.
The Office of Administrating Hearing, is that California?
That's correct.
It is. Mm-hmm. Office of Administrating Hearing, is it .com or .org, or do you know?
Google it anyway. I think it's www.oah.org. So it's Office
of... oah.org.
Correct.
Okay.
Office of Administrative Hearings.
Okay. All right. All right. www.oah.org.
Correct.
All right.
That's the entity, the Office of Administrative Hearings. Also, they do the regional center cases. They do liquor control board.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Yes.
I see. They do a lot of different things. What if a parent, what if someone in a school district, a teacher, principal, vice principal, counselor, etc., sees that a child has some kind of disability, but the parent or parents are in denial and don't want to have some kind of special education for the child? What are some of the issues that go on there? And what are the difficulties that go on?
Well, the parents can always refuse special education.
Well, that's to the detriment of the child, probably.
Perhaps. But perhaps they don't believe what the school district is telling them.
I see.
And so the parents can always refuse consent.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I think that I'm always a proponent of more information is always best. And so it would be better, I think, to allow the school district to assess the child and then determine, based on that assessment and the opinions contained therein, the next steps to take. And as we discussed at the pre-session, if a child did not agree with what the district assessment shows,
if the parent
doesn't agree with what the district assessment shows with regard to their child, they can obtain their own independent mm-hmm. assessment mm-hmm. if they wish to do so. And if they share that with the district must reconvene the IEP team meeting mm-hmm. to discuss that private assessment and make any modifications to the offer that they're required to do.
Who does the assessment at the request of the school district? Who does that?
Professionals within the school district. So you'll
Employees of the school district.
You'll usually have a school psychologist, mm-hmm. a speech-language therapist, mm-hmm. an occupational therapist. Mm-hmm. You could have an adaptive communication expert. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Usually that's a speech therapist as well. But it depends on what the child's being assessed for and what the suspected needs are as to who will make up the IEP team.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in this meeting of the IEP meeting, the parent would be there.
That's
the
correct.
Child, I presume, is not there.
Well, as the child gets older,
As the child gets older, I can understand. But
yes.
let's say we've got a child who's under 10 years of age. Would that child most likely not be at the IEP meeting?
That's correct.
Who would be there besides the parent?
There are people that are required to be there, actually. So it's
who would they be?
The parent... an administrator on behalf of the district, someone that is that's knowledgeable of all the special education mm-hmm. programs within the district, a general education teacher.
It would depend on the suspected disability. So if you suspect mm-hmm. the child has a language disorder, then a speech therapist needs to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody that assessed the child needs to be there. If they cannot be there, they have to send a substitute that is in their mm-hmm. profession mm-hmm. to interpret the test results mm-hmm. and answer mm-hmm. questions to the parents.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you, I've never had anyone hire me to fend off an assessment. I'm usually hired to get a district to assess a child.
Okay.
That people don't pay lawyers to make the district not assess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The fight usually is whether a child is entitled to an IEP or not.
Why would there be this fight that a parent might hire you, Susan, to see that the school district would set up an IEP? Why would the school district not do that automatically?
Well, what happens is a parent suspects there's a disability for whatever reason.
Yes.
And says to the school, I'd like you to assess my child for special education. The district then has 15 days to respond by either providing an assessment plan, identifying all the tests that will be used, or says no.
Mm-hmm.
If a district says, and this happens a lot in kindergarten, the school district will say, no, not yet. Mm. We're doing general ed.
Too young, huh?
Well, we're doing general ed interventions, and we're going to see if that will help the child. And if it doesn't, we'll assess later. And then that's where a fight could begin, because parents don't want to wait to have the child fail, especially in first grade when you're supposed to learn to read. Okay. And that's where the dispute could arise.
Go ahead.
A lot of times a district will go ahead and assess a child and hold an IEP team meeting and say, this child doesn't qualify. Here's the tests. And then parents may go get their own independent assessment, bring it in, and like Kathy said earlier, they have to consider it. But Kathy had something to add.
I just want to say that districts generally don't say, just no, we're not going to assess a child. They may say that we don't believe the criteria that we're seeing at school rises to the level to require an assessment. But it is, they generally are people that, you know, are in the business of helping and teaching students, and they are the most generous people that I've come across, generally the people, my clients.
That's very nice.
The district personnel.
Very nice to know.
You also see a trend where it's the gifted dyslexic kids that in kindergarten the parents are asking for an assessment, and districts are saying, no, he's very smart. And by third grade, the child is, you know, reading at a first grade level, and then they get assessed and qualified. And we lost 2 years by serving that kid. It's a trend. Sometimes it's so obvious the child needs an IEP, there's no fight.
And again, in that situation, the parent, if they strongly believe that the child needs an assessment, can get an independent assessment and then bring that to the district's attention.
And, of course, the independent assessment that the parent gets is something that the parent has to pay for personally without reimbursement from the school district, or what?
Well, no. So there is a procedure for the parent to get an independent education evaluation done that is paid for by the district.
I see.
They have to request one. The district has to give them a list of individuals that are that would qualify for that type of independent education assessment called an IEE. And if the parent does not want to go off that list and they want to go to get their own private assessment, then that's a situation where the district would not pay for it and the parent would have to pay for it on their own.
All right. It's about 727, nearly 727 and a half at 91.7, your local public radio station, KALW in San Francisco. We're doing a program on special education rights of children with disabilities. If you have a question, a comment, a concern, a problem yourself with a child in your family, or if you are aware of someone who you are close to who is confronted with this kind of a problem, where there's a problem perhaps between the parents and the school or whatever, or perhaps you've had an experience which you would like to share with us that you feel might be of some value to the rest of us in listening to it, the number is 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134 on your legal rights. And whether you're listening to the program live in the Bay Area or on the internet, www.kalw.org, that number is the number that you can use, 1-415-841-4134. Let me mention to you, by the way, that 2 weeks from now, on September 18th, we will do a special program on landlord-tenant law, and we will do a special Call a Lawyer night. That's in conjunction with the station's fundraiser. And so we're going to have two Call a Lawyer nights this month. The one will be on September 18th, landlord-tenant, and then the following one will be on the 25th of September when we'll talk about an update of workers' compensation law. I'm Chuck Finney. My guests are Catherine Miola. I refer to her as Kathy. Kathy and I used to work together, or at least we were in the same office, the San Mateo County DA's office, until she left 7 years ago, right?
Yes.
Doesn't seem like it's that long at all. She is now a deputy county counsel, San Mateo County Counsel's office, which is in the same building I'm in. It's the Hall of Justice in Redwood City. My other guest is Susan Foley, a special education rights attorney. Her office is in San Mateo. So join us. A lot of people want to talk to you. And, you know, Martin, when you come back in here, I want to get the correct initials on this because I'm a little confused with the Office of Administrative Hearings, and I don't want to start saying something that's wrong. So when you come back in here, I want you to get these initials correct. Here is, by the way, a question that has, I have I have people who write out long questions that usually are very good, and we'll start with that before we take our first call from someone on the air. Funding for special education can often be very expensive, and it's a category that usually encroaches on the general fund, meaning that special education takes away funding from the rest of the school population. This situation places the school district in a dilemma. The school district may want to meet the needs of special ed students, but it also needs to balance its budget and ensure adequate funding for the rest of the school population. What comments do you have about this?
I would say that's entirely correct. And
yeah.
I think that's why the case law indicates that the offer that the district must make is one that allows the child to make adequate progress. That is not the best program out there for the money.
It's not the Rolls Royce.
It's not the Rolls Royce. And that is because there is this balance between the need to educate both special education students and typically developing peers in the education mm-hmm. field. And so I think that's your
okay.
caller was very astute.
All right. Rich, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Rich, are you there? Hello, Rich. All right. I think we've lost Rich, unfortunately. Rich, if for some reason we lost you, call again. 1-415-841-4134. We have, interestingly enough, all lines are actually lighted up at this point, and I would very much like to, I guess Rich is still not there. Okay. All right. Well, let's find out. Oh, he is there. Rich, are you there? What happened to Rich? Come on. Rich, are you there? All right. I guess I don't know what happened to Rich, but let's have the next caller and so that we can move ahead and find out what's going on here. I would suggest, by the way, for those of you who are interested in getting information to the Office of Administrative Hearings, you probably can Google that and you will get the website. I've been given a website here, but it's quite long, and frankly, I don't think it's something that I want to take the time
I
to do.
I think that is correct, and I do apologize.
Tell me, read off sure. what it is for people.
So, dgs.ca.gov. /OAH/home, H-O-M-E, .ASPX.
And then when you get there, you click on special education.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
Okay.
And then you'll
All
have
right.
several categories.
Okay.
And you can also, again, Google that.
It might be easier just to Google it. All right.
As far as the encroachment on
yes.
the general ed fund, I think every single district special ed department encroaches eventually
yes.
every year, every fiscal year. And I think that one of the ways to prevent that is to hire and put up their own special day classes with very qualified people mm-hmm. and not send these kids out to private if
I
they
see.
Don't have to.
I see.
Because some
see.
Parents are going private because of the quality of the special day classes. So if they got more quality and in-house ABA therapy after school, I know one district that does that, and I'm sure they still get encroached upon, but not to the extent.
With the economy as it has been, is this a difficulty of having more specialists in the public schools or not?
Well, there's an entire industry that sprung up around autism.
I see.
And the ABA therapy is very expensive.
Yes.
But as far as the economy hitting the district's budgets, I believe Obama actually authorized more funding under the Individual Disability Education Act than ever before.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So technically there would be more money, but I don't think school districts look at it that way.
Okay. All right. Nicole, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yeah. Hi there.
Hi there.
I have a situation where I have a third grader who is autistic, and we had him in our public school for kindergarten and first grade and in a special day class, and he just didn't make any progress. And the school and the teacher, and, you know, he had the whole Cadillac program, everything they offered, you know, special day class, speech therapy, occupational therapy, and just was not at standard at grade level with anything and across the board. And we were told, you know, basically once you're in a special day class, there is no standard. And so we decided to put him in a private special education program in our community, and he has made a tremendous amount of improvement. And so here we are 2 years later trying to make the difficult decision of whether we privately pay to keep him in this private school or if we put him back in public where we know that he doesn't make progress. And so we would be looking to ask our district for some support, and I just wanted to get feedback about that process.
Okay, all right. If you'll turn, may she turn her radio back on?
Yes.
Okay, would you turn your radio back on, Nicole, and we'll see if we have some comments for you. What community do you live in?
San Rafael.
San Rafael? Okay, thank you very much for calling. What comments do you have,
Okay, well,
Susan?
In order to be reimbursed, you would have had to give the district a 10-day business day notice that you were removing your child from the public education and going to provide private services and that you would seek reimbursement in the future.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't do that, your chances of being reimbursed for the last 2 years are slim based. And if you go read your parent rights that is given to you at every IEP meeting, you'll see it in there. As far as a child advocate and a special ed lawyer, I say that, I mean, it would be up to you and your professionals whether your child could make any progress in the public system if you return. That's a parent decision with educational professionals.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have a lawyer tell you whether to stay in the private school or not. But as a lawyer, I would tell you if you're going to stay in the private school, seek reimbursement from the district for the costs.
So
pardon me, Kathy, go ahead.
I just want to say the reason for the 10-day notice that Susan referred to is to allow the district a notice that the parents are having a problem with the district placement and to address that those deficiencies or perceived deficiencies on behalf of the parents. And
mm-hmm.
so that is, it's called a reasonableness notice,
mm-hmm.
And it is required before the parents can seek reimbursement. And then with regard to the specific case, again, I'm like Susan, I wouldn't necessarily be able to tell a parent what they need to do in a particular case, but I personally would look at what is the private school doing and what how is that different from the public placement, and then having an IEP team with the public placement and seeing whether or not the program could mirror what's going on in the private school. And you can go and visit the classes and make your decision as to whether or not you feel that it would mirror what's going on in the private school so that your child would make the progress. Mm. That would be just
practical
advice.
What does a parent have to do to get let's say, permission to go and see what's going on in the public school?
Through the IEP team.
I see. There has to be. Okay.
Well,
they just have to request it.
Right.
They have every right to see what a potential placement would be for their child.
So they can go with their request for that to be able to do that, and the school district permitting them to do that, they would actually be able to go into the classroom and see what's going on?
Yes, but
is that right?
Yes, that is correct. But you can't go see four different general ed fourth grade classrooms. You get to see one representative classroom for each category, a special day class, a general ed class. A lot of districts don't fight. They let parents observe.
Okay.
Yes.
And parents don't spend the whole day there.
Right.
Yeah.
But also, you shouldn't just go up to the district and then just try to see whatever class you want to see. I mean, this should be through the process so that you can see the class that's most mirroring what the district is offering as a placement for that particular student.
Do you generally feel, Susan, with parents who are trying to see with this example of the child being in a private school and the parent trying to see whether or not the child can come back to the public school, do you see that the most viable approach to this would be with a parent hiring a special education attorney to help them? Or is this something, generally speaking, that a parent, if a parent goes to some of the websites we've talked about and tries to educate him or herself or themselves, that they can do on their own, generally speaking?
Well, what I would advise that parent to do is to request an IEP team meeting with the school district and ask the school district to invite the private school teachers.
I see.
And hold the IEP team meeting. This is the way the law has set it up.
With the private school teachers in the meeting.
Yes. So they can contribute
to
what this child needs and what he's been doing. And have a true IEP meeting with brainstorming, mm-hmm. and then the private school teachers can advise the public mm-hmm. school teachers what this child would need in order to learn. And sometimes it can be done. And as the child gets older, you might want the public school system, because then the child learns how to navigate real, mm-hmm. real people.
Yeah.
And a private yeah. school can form a bubble, and then yeah. the child's in shock when they leave the private school. So it all depends on the child.
And that is exactly why the least restrictive environment is something that the school districts are mandated to mm-hmm. provide. Mm-hmm. That is what Susan was just referring to, is that there are a lot of benefits and a lot of articles out there about special education students being mm-hmm. educated side by side, typically developing peers, because they find out how to navigate through that world, mm-hmm. which is the world they're going to have to be in when they're not in school.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And when they're done with school.
We want to go into the real world.
Right. Yeah.
But then there's yeah. children that cannot learn in an environment with more than six other students and one teacher, yeah. and they won't learn to read. But some of those kids get up to seventh, eighth grade, and they do go back into the public system.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and then mm-hmm. they love it. They are playing mm-hmm. football
sure.
and PE.
Right. A lot of fun.
So it all depends on yeah. the child, which is why individualized comes into all our work.
All right, let me see if Rich is there. Rich, are you there finally? Rich, are you there? Okay, Rich is not here today. All right, let me just do this for a moment. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. For a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KALW listeners like you. This particular segment on special education rights of children with disabilities is funded by the San Mateo County Bar Association, which also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. That number is 650-369-4149. If you are in any other county in the state of California, every county has a bar association and lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. You should be able to get a human being on the other end of the phone. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to try to find someone who's experienced and set you up for a half an hour consultation. And depending on the county, for a half an hour, it could be a low of $25 or maybe a high of $35. Well, I've just about given up on Rich. I'm going to try once more. Rich, are you there? I guess not. Karen, are you there?
Yes, I am.
We're very good. Karen, thank you very much for staying on the line. Welcome to your legal rights.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
I have a question for Susan Foley. I have a son who receives special education services. He is in the fourth grade and requires a full inclusion aid. And
what does that mean, Karen? What does a full inclusion aid mean?
Someone who is there with him the entire time that he is in the classroom.
Ah,
He has cerebral palsy and is in a wheelchair.
Ah, yes.
But is in the classroom there is no pull out. Any services are a push in, mm-hmm. And he requires an aid to help him write things out. He drives a power chair, all around the campus. That part is very accessible for him. But the aide in the classroom helps him with writing or maybe a transfer from the wheelchair to the adaptive school chair,
mm-hmm.
those sorts of things. Helping, with assistance at lunchtime and, maybe in the library choosing a book off the shelf, those sorts of things.
So what is your question or comment?
My question is, he has had an IEP ever since he entered public school, and the IEP meeting is traditionally held the end of the school year, generally around May. But what seems to happen is, from the time that the IEP team meets in May till the school year starts in September, it seems that a lot of these things that had been agreed upon by the team, decided on by the team, they don't happen come September.
Mm.
So, for example, certain software that's needed for a computer is not ready the first day of school. This year, for example, the laptop that had been provided in the classroom was not ready and available. There seems to be delays in these sorts of items. You know, everyone agrees that a computer is needed, this software is needed, this particular joystick or, computer adaptive devices are needed, but then it doesn't happen.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering.
Karen, I guess my first question would be, have these items been written down in the IEP document?
They have been written down as recommendations, and then everybody agrees upon them, signs the IEP, and then it's as though nothing, and then it's as though it was never mentioned.
Okay, then your remedy would be to file what's called a compliance complaint with the California Department of Education, and it's called Procedural Safeguards, and the complaint itself is on their website. It's 3 pages, and you can fill it out, and it'll say, what was your problem? What is your problem? And you say, district's not complying with the IEP. What do you propose to be a solution? District comply with the IEP by providing ABC, which would be all the equipment you're talking about. And the CDE, the California Department of Ed, has 60 days to investigate and order the district to do something or say that, you know, they are in compliance. And that is the fastest, cheapest way. Without having to hire a lawyer, that you could get a remedy.
I would also suggest before you go to CDE to make the complaint is to talk to the director of special education and point out the pages in the IEP in which those items were recommended or promised and say that you have not received them or your child has not received them, and then perhaps get the remedy that way as opposed to going to CDE. But yes, of course, if you don't get response or adequate response or the items in a reasonable period of time, then you need to go to CDE to make the complaint.
And that's a good point Kathy makes. You could actually write to the director of special ed and give that director 5 business days to comply with the IEP, or you will file a compliance complaint, and that usually gets their attention. I wouldn't go to the teacher or the school psychologist. I'd go directly to the director of special ed and say, within 5 days, I'm going to file
of the school district.
Of the school district.
Yes.
Within 5 days, I'm going to file a compliance complaint.
Mm-hmm.
And you could show them a copy of what you're going to file and list what you need. And they may solve the problem right away.
Yeah. You know,
do you think that 5 business days is a reasonable length of time?
Yes, I do. I think that if they promise something and everybody signed off on it in May, and the first week of school the child doesn't have the equipment that was promised, I think you should absolutely bring it to someone's attention mm-hmm. and file a compliance complaint. I had a student once wait 18 months for a stander. She's in a wheelchair, and she could stand up, but she couldn't because the district promised a stander 18 months earlier.
This is something you can that helps you stand up. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. It helps a child that's in a wheelchair stand up, and she would just have to sit in her wheelchair, and one of the yard duty teachers said, tell her to bring her Barbie dolls, and because she has to sit in the corner. So I wouldn't wait to complain that the equipment is not being provided.
That's certainly
But I would also be reasonable with the director of special ed. You might actually get it faster if you have a cooperative director than waiting 60 days for the compliance decision.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
And then may I ask a second question?
Go ahead, please. Yeah, Karen, go ahead.
Can you tell me what are parents' legal rights when it comes to an aid that is hired and paid for by the district? What kind of input does a parent have if they don't feel that the aid is a good fit for their son or daughter?
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, a parent has a right to request an IEP meeting to talk about that particular aid or that particular person and why they feel that that person is not a good fit. But the law requires basically that the school district offer the services, and then the school district is the implementer of those services. The school district makes the decisions as to how those services are implemented. But,
yeah.
But the district does not have... As we talked about, sometimes the school district and the parent are in a relationship that starts at when the child is age 3 and goes all the way to 22. So it's not in the best interest for the district to have an acrimonious relationship with a parent for that entire period of time. And so
a full inclusion aid is a related service that a child needs in order to benefit in the placement he or she is in. the related service needs to help the child benefit. If for some reason the aide is not allowing the child to benefit from his placement or his education, then it's not appropriate and you're reasonable to say, I need a different aide with different qualifications. If it's a personality preference or a parent preference, then, but the child is still learning and socializing, it's just not what the parent would prefer, then I think that there is no basis for a complaint.
I would agree with that.
Personally, my son had a speech therapist for a couple years that I didn't, she didn't like me and I didn't like her, but he learned from her. And I had to learn my lesson and let go of my preferences.
I see.
Okay, Karen?
All right. Thank you all for your time. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Karen, very much for calling. This is Your Legal Rights. It's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. I'm Chuck Finney. My guests are Susan Foley, a special education rights attorney. Her offices are in San Mateo. And Catherine Miola, Deputy County Counsel, San Mateo County Counsel's office. And Tony, are you there?
Yeah.
Hey, good. I'm glad you're there. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I wanted to raise a couple of points. And then, first off, is that a parent's experience with going through the school systems with a child with various handicaps can actually be quite well and rewarding. As somebody mentioned earlier, a lot of the people who are involved in the care of these kids really are lovely people to care a lot about them. I think a lot of the earlier discussion got dominated by autism, and that's a very, very difficult area for everybody. If you have a kid who has physical handicaps or some language acquisition or something, but who can bond with his or her caregivers, they can make whatever progress that the condition allows them to make. Then the other comment that I'd like to make is that really the level of services that may be available at districts vary greatly, unfortunately, by the size of the district. As an example, my granddaughter went through Oakland, which is a large school district and provided a large range of services and has a very good program called TACL for their severely handicapped kids. And I've had the opportunity to spend lots of time with TACL people and TACL kids. It's absolutely amazing. And then finally, a comment about some of the stuff that kids may get that'll help them, whether it's special wheelchairs or laptops, etc. That stuff is funded by the state, and the state makes the funding decision. I don't know what the current funding stories are, but that's one of the holdups. You've got to go through the state for some or a lot of that stuff, and that point needs to be brought out as well.
Let me get some comments for you, Tony. Thank you very much for calling. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what comments do you have about the state? Did you hear that? Or
yes,
right,
I did. What I understand is the state of California, Sacramento, doles out the money to the counties, which doles it out to the school districts. Mm-hmm. And it's the school districts, and they're autonomous, and they buy the equipment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't believe equipment comes from the state. It may come from the county.
You have some comments, Kathy, on that?
I would say that the district does buy the equipment. That's correct. The special education money is funneled from the state to the SELPA, the Special Education Local Plan Area. And then the SELPA distributes the money out to the school districts for mm-hmm. special education. I mean, we've heard a caller indicate that there might be some delays, and, mm-hmm. and I do agree that the beginning of a school year is extremely busy for all mm-hmm. of the school administrators. And a lot of the schools are closed over the summer or for some period of time mm-hmm. over the summer. So it may be just one of those things about the start of the school year. But I do want to point out that caller indicated that their annual IEP is always in May at the end of the school year.
This is Karen you're talking
yes,
about.
Correct.
Yes,
correct. And you can move the annual IEP. You can agree as an IEP team that the date of the annual IEP is going to be moved to better address, say, those types of issues.
Which would be February or March, for example.
Perhaps. Yes, exactly. And so there's always that option as well.
Mm-hmm.
But Yes.
Okay.
The state funds the special education through the local SELPA plan.
Any other comments with respect to the points that Tony raised? All right. I think, Anthony, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, hi. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thanks. My child has been on the special education rolls since he was 3 years old. He actually transitioned in from the regional center. And in working with the school district, I would echo the comments of an earlier caller that they are people who care about the children. But the problem has always been one of resources, and that the district doesn't have enough resources. And we worked with a special education attorney, and we really pushed hard, and we got as much as we possibly could for our son, whose diagnosis is autism. And, you know, at this point, he's 9 years old, and the services are fading. He's transitioning into a mainstream situation, and he is a real success story. And what I just wanted to communicate with is the importance of putting that extra push in very early.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, the funding, it seems very tight, and it seems like, gosh, you know, we really can't afford to do this. But the problem is it's like a lever. It's like you need to do this as soon as possible. And if you do, then in the long term, the cost-benefit analysis comes out a net positive. It just really is important that districts get the funding to, you know, intervene early, because it makes a difference and it saves money in the long run, not just for the school district, but for society. You have a child who might have been an ongoing burden to society, who is, you know, really brilliant and going to make, you know, great contributions. That's my comment.
That's a wonderful success story, I would just say, on behalf of the districts. And I would agree. I have children as well, as Susan does. And we all know that we have to be advocates for our own children, and that's what this process allows by requesting an IEP team meeting, by getting an independent assessment if you think that that is necessary, by advocating for your child. And when you do that and you're a participating part of that IEP team, then hopefully your child will get the services that he or she deserves so that they can be a success story, just as you've indicated.
All right. Let me do this at the end. We talked about it earlier in the program, the California Office of Administrative Hearings. The website at the top of the list is a ca.gov page with the URL, and here it is, www.dgs.ca.gov/OAH/HOME.ASPX. I will not repeat it. And I think if you didn't get it, but you're interested, Google it, and I think you should be able to get it at that point. I want to thank you both very much for coming on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Very, very nice to have you here. My guests have been Catherine Miola, Deputy County Counsel, San Mateo County Counsel's Office, and Susan Foley, Special Education Rights Attorney. Her office is in San Mateo. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your Legal Rights production staff members are Program Engineer Joanne Marr and Production Assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the San Mateo County Bar Association. Additional funding is provided by the Trusts and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and the California Applicants Attorneys Association. If you're wondering what's involved with the Affordable Care Act, also referred to as the Obamacare Act, or Obamacare, we're going to be talking about the basics of that. This will be our first program. I think we're going to do two. My guests will be Bonnie Preston, Outreach and Policy Specialist, U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, San Francisco Office, and Amber Cutler, Staff Attorney, the National Senior Citizens Law Center. That's next week. Thank you very much for joining me on Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney.